All right, this is the inaugural rendition of D's practice pod. Today I have Mr. Frank Belucci with me. Is it Belucci or Belucci?
Belucci.
CCI or SHI?
CCI.
Yeah. Good to know.
Yeah, see, okay. Everybody spells it. I can tell them 15 times. Two C's, and they'll still put either one C or
there's out. There's a good reason for that. There's some pretty famous people with the other name, right?
Yeah, okay. Not as famous as me, but yeah.
Okay. Not in our circles, right?
Yeah, you go.
Okay. Okay. I first saw you when I was a kid at a clinic that the Long Island Drum Center was holding, and you showed us an exercise for hi-hat, wherein you're playing 16th notes on the hi-hat, and you're opening it in the four possible places that you can open it, right? And actually, I have something to show you later. I have something on, I've written a bunch of books.
I know, yeah.
You know? And
I have one of them you gave me at the drum center.
Oh, okay, cool, right. Well, the latest one that I'm still writing is called Young Frankendrummer. And it's one of the pages is dedicated to you and the measure exercise. And basically, I just expounded on it. So I'd like you to see that.
Yeah.
But you're a left-handed drummer.
Yeah.
And you play on a left-handed kit.
If
you'll notice here, our student kit is set up to hopefully accommodate both left and right-handed people.
Because
I started playing left-handed when I started playing. And I always thought it unfair that everything was all set up for right-handed guys, you know? So tried to cut the... Plus, you know, let's just say you had it the regular way and you're going to play on traditional drums and you want to play left-handed. 5 minutes takes to maybe flip it around, then 5 minutes to... You know, put it the other way. Well, that's 10 minutes now. Now, whose time is that? Is that your time? Is it my time? Is it the other student's time?
Very true.
You know?
This is great.
So, hopefully, you know. So, I get asked a lot of questions by students about being a professional. And I am a professional, but I haven't played with the people with the kind of notoriety that you have. Could you tell us, to just do a little name dropping for me?
I've been lucky, but I'll just start with this weekend because it's right on my mind. You know, just played with Dean Brown, who's just a monster guitar player. You know, he's on Billy Cobham records. He's on a million things. He's on tour with Billy Cobham now, actually, as we speak. You know, with Steve Smith and the bass player with Skylar Deal, who, you know, goes back with Billy Joel and Michael Bolton and another one that's on all these recordings. And the band was just, you know, smoking it. It was original stuff. So it was, you know, it was a test for me because we tried to get together Friday, but Dean was coming in from Boston after his show with Billy. And by the time he got to, we rehearsed in Baldwin at Skylar's house. By the time he got there, I was there. I had to go to Long Beach and start the Jazz Fest that day. So by the time we all settled down, the horn players show up. We didn't even get through probably half of it, you know, because, you know, we're not talking just, I mean, some was just some basic, you know, maybe a blues basic arrangements, but some of them were intense. And, you know, playing drums with this, and especially the guys that they're used to playing with, you know, I have to admit, it was tough, you know, but thank God that we read, which is so important, that every student should know. Because although he sent me tracks beforehand, with charts, you get these charts, and a lot of times the tracks they're sending you are from maybe live recordings, which are not
different arrangements.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You have charts that have been handwritten over and over again to where it becomes diluted.
Mud. Yeah.
Do this, you know, one time they probably cut a section out, and then this time they're going back to the section, but you see in X's and all the. So, listening to it, until you play, as you know, you have to play and get the feel for everyone. That's the key.
Absolutely. Would you consider yourself, would you consider your playing above your reading?
I, yeah, I would imagine so, because that's the first thing that comes, I think, for all of us. I don't know anybody that says, oh, I want to play drums because I want to read.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so we're very different that way. You know, a lot of instruments like piano, it's almost one in the same because it just has to be.
Yeah, right. It's something that, yeah. I mean, but still, you know, everybody, you know, when we're kids or whenever we get that feeling, or, you know, where you realize that this is something I want to do, I mean, we all start, it's like saying, you know, hey, mom, I want a guitar, you know, yeah. I want a piano.
Right.
So a lot of times it becomes where you just get the instrument before the lessons and the reading.
Absolutely.
And then you realize that, okay, if I want to take it further. Drums, fortunately, I guess, and unfortunately, is one instrument where everybody feels they can play. You know,
And
that's why it becomes, and, you know, not to get off the subject here, but I learned to read later on in life. I was already playing, you know, 5 years old, my father was taking me to his restaurant and bar that he owned. And just playing, you know, as a kid. And then later on, 10, 11 years old, I was doing some parties with an accordion player.
Right.
Just playing.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't know anything about a rudiment.
Oh, I was the same way. I was I'm always going to be a better player than a reader.
It's, you know.
Because I started later myself.
Right. I did. And then I was probably, I would say, maybe 18 when I started buckling down because I loved the big band stuff. And I said, in order to do that, you have to read. You're not getting the chance to, you know, listen to the music beforehand. You have to read those kicks. So I really buckle down. And I still, you know the deal. I do all these gigs, but a lot of them are not tough reading things. They're basically a basic form. If I do the jazz gigs, here's just the form of the tune, a few kicks. If you're doing real book tunes, you know. So it's nothing really.
I guess it depends on who your conductor is, really.
Yes. And this weekend was, okay, this stuff was written out.
Right.
You know, this is the
verbatim. Yeah, right.
So you know, and it's especially when you're playing the drums, you know, you think about all these things. You always, you know, I know for me, I never could find a comfortable spot for the music stand, number one. We basically put it on our hi-hat. But now, you know, now you have your whole drum set the other way.
Oh, yeah.
Now, depending, because I'm lefty, a lot of times people don't realize, so when we set up, the conductor or leader is on the opposite side of me.
Right.
Because they're so used to the drummer having the hi-hat on the one
of course.
Side, you know,
right.
left side as opposed to me on the right.
Right, right.
So here I am facing a wall, no less.
Oh, my God.
You're not looking at your drums. You're looking at the drum. You're trying to turn to look at whoever's conducting. So it's a lot to do. So you want to at least be comfortable with reading.
Right.
That's what I tell my students. Because now if you're not comfortable with reading, now it's hard enough you're leading the band. Now you're trying to look at the conductor. You're trying to look at your drums, you know, when you're playing. So you have so much going on now that it's very hard to focus on the most important thing, the music.
Right. Who did you turn to when you decided you needed to learn to read?
Al Miller was the guy, you know, and I'm still buddies with, as we said, I'm still real tight with Matt. I just spoke to him yesterday, so who's a, you know, monster. Al Miller was the guy. You know, I used to go to the drum center at times and just to get equipment and stuff, you know, and I'd be going to gigs.
Right.
And even then, you know, I always, this weekend, I played with about six different groups at the Jazz Fest that Steve Adelson ran, and, you know, I'm blessed enough that he invites me every year, and this year I got to play with so many different groups. And so it's, the one thing that, you know, they all goofed around, like even the crowd there, and go, oh, here you are again, you're playing with again. The best compliment, we all like compliments, you know, and you have to know where it's coming from.
Sure.
But, you know, the best thing that I heard was the hardest working man in show business. So I said, you know what, I'll take that, because to hear great or the best, there's no such thing as that, you know, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
It's what your taste is, and you know, I always say there are musicians in other countries that will never see the light of day that will stay.
They're tremendous, yeah. Right. Well, some of these guys coming out of Europe now, like the Marco Minimans and guys like that, it's like a completely different instrument than what I'm playing.
It's just, it's going further and further.
Right.
But the thing of, when I heard that, and even Dean at one point, and he's a guy that's all over the world, goes, man, you're like the hardest working guy around. That I'll take. That I, you know, if not for anything else, I like my kids to know that. That at least, you know, regardless of what, it's not fame, it's definitely not fortune, that's for sure. But it's what I do for a living, I try to be, you know.
And it's nice to see somebody recognize that.
That's exactly the point, yeah. You know.
Absolutely.
And, I know I'm all over the place here, but the main thing was Al Miller.
Right.
And that's what I have to say when I was really on the game, as you know, when you went, because
right.
I used to go, I think it was only 45 minutes to his house and play you.
Right.
And he already knew I could play the drums, so we never touched the drum set with him. Never did.
We had that same deal.
Same thing, right?
Yeah.
He knew you could play. He saw. He knew already my hands were there because I had, you know, already done the stuff with Jim and Chapin. And but so I said, Al, stuff I never did, which was the snare drum reading, the orchestral stuff I never did. The rudimental stuff I never did.
That guy could read anything.
Forget about it, you know?
Like black ink and threw it from across the room, he'd tell you what that was. Unbelievable.
And the sweetest man. And, you know, like I said, here are his two sons. We had the four kids, but his two sons, I would be going there, and I'm sure you know, I'd be hearing Matt upstairs practicing the Chicoria records, and I'm like, who's that,
right.
You know? So, Al was, and I would go, and I'm sure you did too, with literally a pile of books in a bag.
No less than 14.
You know, right?
Yeah.
And just say, Al, I want to hit every one. And I knew when I went there for the lesson that I would have what he gave me and the page after, because when you went to him, you never went back to any other page. He put the new page up, and let's go. So I always said, I want to be prepared and not make a fool of myself, so I would do my lessons and then get the page after down. And he would say, if you have no questions, we keep going. And then I would just write out, okay, how does this go?
Right.
Because when I went through that, it was the Cerrone book, Kick My Butt, and that Albright book, which I look back now.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I can't even go through half that stuff that I have to. It's like.
And I got all his notes in there.
Right.
And you know what? I would love to be able to pick his brain on some of those things now.
It's very true, man.
You know?
It's just wild that I look at it now and go, I did this? You know? So now and then if I have a student that I know, because I'm like, I'm going through with my student, I'm telling him, I'm like, man, I did all this. Look at the dates on my book, you know?
Most of what I have that I'll put on screen is all my books that I worked on with him. So you see his writing with the date next to it.
Yeah, that's great.
83?
I know.
How old are you?
Yeah, well, yeah, you're young still, yeah. But like I said, I did that as far as for me later in life, because I never, you know, I went on the road when I was 18. I didn't go to school, college, which brings me to another point where I guess for me it was the best thing. I mean, does a part of me wish that I went to maybe, you know, Berkeley, or did I go on to, you know, like all my buddies went on to you know, study music. But I went on the road. So now I see a lot of my friends.
That's its own college.
That's it. There was no better way, you know, and maybe that's why I think about why I work, because I didn't have the educational, let's say, side of it, but I knew how to work with a band, any style, how to work with leaders, and that I learned the hard way being on the road.
Right. And it's funny, we've followed a lot of the same pathways here. I was set up to go to SUNY Old Westbury, went the first day, realized that what they were going to teach me, I took the hardest percussion course they had, percussion 1 through 4, and I realized everything they were going to teach me that semester, I'd learned with Al Miller 2 years beforehand. And I'm like, but I also had some conscience going here, because we had a family business. And so I just kept on seeing my dad alone on a truck as I'm, all right, do I want to learn how to learn piano, violin, all of these things, while my dad's busting his hump? Or I figured I was going to be a rock star anyway, right?
what do I need?
You know, so I've had that same conundrum, you know, that same question in my mind, should I have gone to school for this? Or, you know, as far as drums go, I don't think it makes a difference. And I think we're unique in that, you know?
Yeah.
Because we do, there's so many private guys, you can learn way more than you'll learn in school, you know? But if you want a piece of paper that says that you'll have tenure, that you'll have insurance, that you'll have this, you'll have that,
right.
then sure, it's the way to go. So, yeah, I, you know, I'm 47. I still weigh that, you know?
And to tell your kids, you know, I have two kids, to say, well, you're going off to school, you know, well, you didn't go, you know, I'm not going to lie, I didn't go. But they see what I do for a living. So it's almost like, you know what, it was like a path that I don't know if I chose, a higher force. Whatever you want to call it.
Sometimes things work out the way they're supposed to.
It just, you know, chose me, and I say, would it have made me, it may be different, but you can't judge different that better or worse. You know, it might have been different, but one thing I always did, when I came off the road, I went for all lessons. I searched out every top guy, so Billy Cobham, I picked him up at the airport, and then I took him to his mother's house in Jamaica, Queens. So I picked his brain for hours. Not only did I take a lesson with him, but I got more out of being in the car with him. You know, Steve Smith and Rob Morgenstein, who's my buddy. We did a duo drum thing last year.
Another left-handed guy. Another time I saw you. I saw you at a clinic with him while the Dixie Dregs were touring with Rush.
Oh, yeah.
And the other drummer there was Joe Franco.
Holy, that was incredible.
That was, yeah, above the fire department,
whatever.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. Yeah.
I like that, right? And it was funny because we were goofing on Joe saying, now there's two lefty kids. You never see that.
Right.
But that was, yeah, man. And Joey Franco's still a great friend. But I always, you know, when, even when Tommy Aldridge came, I searched out everybody just to pick their brain. And, you know, because... You know, maybe they weren't so much the teacher, quote, you know, kind of.
But you at least want to know what makes them tick.
Yeah,
because they've got something that people are.
What are they? Exactly.
Gravitated towards.
And Aldridge was great because he talked about the business, how he got screwed with certain signing contracts and thinking you could move on to another band and you couldn't because you was. And he said, I had to not work for like months or 6 months or whatever he said, just because of something where now you're not allowed to go to another band. So.
Now, was that just a contractual thing with a band? Was it a union thing?
You know what? I don't know if it was something that we was with at the time, that he was still under this contract. So, I'm sure if they would have said, all right, it's cool, go on.
Right.
But I guess it was something where, you know, somebody's breaking somebody's chops there.
Right.
And say, oh, now you're not, well, you know what? Legally, you can't go out for another, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then I went to, you know, real... Like Dave Garibaldi, he had his stuff together. He came with the sheets. I just drew blank. The great drum teacher from Berkeley. He's no longer there. That Vinny went to all the drummers with, the Steve Smith.
Well, I know. Chafee?
Yeah, Gary Chafee. Okay. What's wrong with me? So when I went for him, I was shaking. You know, and I took maybe...
Well, Rod is there now, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right. But Chafee... was one where when I went in, I was nervous because there was no bull crap. You know, other guys like Billy Conway was like kind of hanging and talking. I did a lesson with Dennis Chambers that we soloed for an hour for the lesson. I wish I could find it because I brought a cassette. I said, this would be a classic if I could find this. I went all the way to NIAC to take a lesson. So my point again is, and this is for the students, you learn from everyone. So in the time I was going to, you know, search out what made these people where they are, you know, how did they get where they are now?
Right.
And sometimes it's not, a lot of times, it's not a paradiddle or this book or this. It's
right.
Ron Morgenstein's the best. He says, Frank, if I wasn't at the same school at the same time,
right.
You know, with the Dregs,
right.
It was, you know, that's how it became. It just created like that. He goes, who knows why that happens, you know?
Sure.
But you know what it is? You want to be prepared. So if it takes you to be reading, you should be prepared. Whatever it is, you know, you have to have your chops up. You have to have, and the thing I like to say to my students is be a chameleon. There's a lot of, as you know, drummers that could do that. And now there's speed demons. You know, students that come
the whole,
scary, you know.
Yeah.
Pedal, but you have to know how, I always relate it to toolbox. So you want to have your toolbox filled. That when
right.
you walk into a gig, a job, you know that, okay, this will take this tool and this tool. Not when you walk in, maybe you have two tools that are great, that work, but now the job you go to, you can't use those. So what do? You have to be able to dig deep at times and know how to, first of all, you know, go to the gig, be on time, you know the story, get along with people, which sometimes is not the easiest thing.
Musicians are very fickle.
Yeah. It's the hardest thing for you. Right. But it's be a chameleon to go, you got to play brushes on this gig. You can only use a snare, a hi-hat, and a little bass drum. Do that. You go to another gig and you can use this double bass. Great. You go to another gig, you have to, you know, adjust. Maybe it's reading. Right. Maybe it's the volume so low, but you still have to keep the... It's so many things that if you want to work, you have to adjust to the situation. You
know? It's funny. When I was teaching at the Long Island Drum Center, one time I'm hearing an argument between these two guys, and it goes on for a long time because I finished the student, and these guys are still talking. They were trying to decide who the better drummer was. Was it Buddy Rich or Steve Gadd? Okay, monsters, okay? Right. And one guy comes in sort of after the fact and just kind of kills the whole argument. Because they have their reasons or whatever, but the guy goes, here's the question I have. If Buddy was sick, could Gadd do his gig? Sure. Okay. If Gadd was sick, could Buddy do his gig? Kind of depends on what the gig was, right?
Exactly.
As Buddy Rich, for the students that don't know, is arguably the best big band drummer of all time. Certainly the most well-known. He's the name that gets dropped by non-drummers.
Right.
So
exactly.
Jim, him, and Gene Krupa, you know. But, yeah, it is be a chameleon, absolutely.
And those are the ones I always looked up to. You know, like and he's a buddy of mine, which is, you know, sometimes when I'm hanging with him, I'm like, I can't believe it's Vinny Colaiuta. You know, it's like, you know, and I tell him too, I laugh, because one minute we're laughing and stuff, you know, and then I'm going, wait a minute, you know. It's like being around, you know, whatever, Chick Corea or, you know, to me, John Coltrane, whatever, name it, you know.
Right, yeah.
Herbie Hancock, you see, it'd be like, those are your buddies, and I look at Vinny, who's a genius.
Just
you know?
Just to be able to do, like, let's say the Faith Hill song, Cry.
There you go.
How simple was it just to move that one snare drum? And his thing, especially with the odd time stuff, he likes to play every other. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and now he made it even because it's a two-measure phrase.
Yeah, right.
So he can play with that a lot. Well, you know, he was with Zappa.
There you go. Now you talk about, here I am, you know, worried about what I had a sight read this weekend. Think about when he went in for an audition, and everybody tells the story. Bozio from,
yeah.
You know, he went in, and it was like Zappa couldn't throw enough at him. Couldn't throw anything harder at this guy to read.
Songs like Keep It Greasy, where there's a section in there where it's in like 1916 time, and then for one measure, it's 2116
right,
time, then it goes back to
1916.
My gosh.
That's why, so I look at someone like him that does that, then he goes, plays with Sting, he just got off tour, plays with Herbie, does, you know, pop records. He's on, who happened to, a few months back, I play in Huntington, and Michael Bublé was there because he was filming a movie. His wife was filming a movie or something.
Okay.
So I said, you got to get him to come up. So the manager's like, well, I'll ask him and stuff. He's downstairs with his own little party there, mm-hmm. whatever. I go, just tell him that the drummer upstairs is friends with Vinny Colaiuta. So he goes, what's his name? I go, Vinny Colaiuta. I write it down. Goes downstairs. He goes, man, the band would love to meet you. You know, if you could just go say hi. He goes, the drummer upstairs is friends with Vinny. He goes, as I'm saying his name, trying to say it, who plays it? Colaiuta? Man, that's my man. Because Vinny played with him, you know, and
right.
he's on that song.
Well, who hasn't he played with? You just look at his site and you look at his discography.
It's insane.
He's done more this year than most people do in their whole careers. And this hasn't even been like that busy of a year for him.
I'll give you one better. And my friend Billy Heller, great piano player I played with last night, we went to see Vinny in the city. And, you know, I get him in the car to drop him off at the hotel. Billy's behind her. So just for the heck of it, I put on a CD, and it's him. And Vinny's listening, and he's going, man, that ain't bad. Who's this? Billy in the back seat fell on the floor, you know? And I'm like, that's you. Holy crap, man. It was something he did with, I forgot, you know, the guy that was in Zappa, the guitar player, had his own solo record.
Di Meola?
Who?
Al Di Meola?
No.
Steve Vai.
Not Vi either. They.
Oh.
I think this guy's brother plays drums. So, but this is what happens when you get to this age. I can't think of it. But anyway, he was on his solo record, so we were laughing, you know.
That's funny.
And every time I see Ben, I'll dig out something just to go, man, you're on this. It was a pop record. And I said, I always loved this song. And finally, when I look deep, you look deeper into it. It's like with Picaro. How many times you hear a tune, you go, all my life I loved this.
Right.
Let me look at who's on the record. And you see, either his name comes up, you know, usually again or come.
Right.
And you just go, man, no wonder. Like, you know, you just heard this record from the 70s that had a great groove.
Right.
And you never look deeper, you know.
Right.
But it's like, you know, so again, you want to be able to go from something where you're playing the outer thing. That's why I love still do my jazz gigs. I get to be a different person.
Right.
I still play with the, you know, 9-piece band Uppercut, where we get to play, you know, I get to bash a little and play,
sure,
you know, Tower Power, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Chicago, who, yeah, I love, and Danny Seraphine was one of my idols. So I get to do that. I still do this original thing with Jazzophonic, where Billy Heller charts and Bob Gallo charts, we play.
Right.
So I get to do me because it's original stuff.
Right.
And, you know, last night I played a jazz gig. I do every Monday, nice and light. And this weekend I'm going to be all over the place. You know, it's Thursday I play with a 5-piece band that we do some Elton John's, a little Sting, so I get to be a different person there. And,
that's,
you
cool,
know, after the week I'm really thankful of, if I had to do one thing, I go insane, you know?
I think drummers who have that mentality. I mean, if you look at my CD collection, it looks like 10 different people's CD collections.
Right.
And I think it serves us well that we get bored easily, because then you're going to want to find yourself in a different head.
Amen.
You know?
Right.
I mean, some of these guys were just, and I find it more in jazz than in anything else, the purists.
Yeah.
You know, where it has to be this, it has to be.
Right.
They're forgetting what jazz was.
Yeah.
Jazz was the outlaw back in the day, you know?
Great point. And even with certain things that are happening now, you know, and I'm, you know what? I'm at fault too, because certain things I just kind of turned off to, and then maybe a student comes in or hits me with something, and I'm like, oh man, you know, I didn't give this a chance or whatever. And, you know, I always think of this. Jim Chapin, again, who was one of my dear friends, and you know him,
right,
you know,
mm-hmm,
sweetest guy in the world. He's the one with, I still thank that at 56 years old, I haven't had any injuries, knock on wood here. But, you know, he would always, no matter what, go see drummers, especially at the NAMM show when everything was going on. You had the best jazz from the hardest rock players to, you know, and even if it was some drummer that was just bashing or what, he found something good,
positive to say about it.
Everything, and you know what? I try to always now keep that with me, whether it is music or someone, or maybe, you know, certain things are not our taste. Even certain players you see, you go, all right, you know, I don't get it, but does that mean there's, you know,
no merit in it?
Yeah, really right.
Right.
Exactly. So you try to look beyond and, you know, see that and go, all right, what can we get? What do you get out of it? Sometimes you go to to see a band or whatever, and you get something out of it. It may not be good, but it makes you, you know, it hits you on something as far as, okay.
Absolutely.
You learn something, you know?
Definitely. Who would you say, as players, I mean, we touched on a few already. Who do you think would be your biggest influence as a player?
In my time, because my father always had the big band records going, were all the big band players, like, you know, of course, Gene Krupa. That was the thing. Then when, you know, seeing Buddy Rich, Sonny Payne always freaked me out. You know, watching him and just, you know, that's why when you see guys like twirling out and stuff, you know, these dudes were doing that then, you know, Sonny Payne behind his back and the Count Basie, all those drummers that came through that, you know, that scene were, I guess in the beginning, my biggest influence, as far as the style and the big band stuff. That's what brought me to Chicago.
Right.
And when I heard Chicago and Blood, Sweat, and Tears, because now they took the big band and put a little rock and funk on it.
Spinning Wheel was the very first song I learned to play the whole thing on a drum kit.
Yeah, great. Yeah, and what an arrangement. And yeah. So seeing Seraphine and hearing that band with horns where there's kicks going on, but you're hearing Terry Kath, who was a monster, you know, I mean, playing these solos and just, so that really got me going. So, you know, then it was like the Seraphine and Columbia.
Right.
And then, I guess, Garibaldi. Of course, Ringo, you know, because you saw that. So there was always... something that I'm thankful that I did come from more from that, you know, the big band side of it and those drummers. And
right.
Then, of course, was, you know, Tony Williams. To see that guy was just, you know, that was someone I think that freaked everybody out, watching him and just what he took. So it was more...
Really simple, intelligent player.
Yeah. You know, and just at the age he was, it just, there's certain things where, man, that's not right for that age. How do you do... But, and... It was, you know, those drummers. And then, of course, when Gad came on the scene, like, listening to that stuff, it was like, how was it? Because he brought it to another level then, you know. Whether it, I guess the 70s with him, where you just heard, how was this? Who's playing this, you know? But also the records from the 50s and 60s, because those drummers were jazz big band drummers.
Right.
You know, they came from that when they were playing more of that rock groove, it would always swung. And that's
right.
What you try to tell, which Bonham did and Mitch Mitchell did.
Right.
They had swing
right.
in their rock. So now sometimes that's the thing I think that's lacking for me is everything is 16 note, 32nd note kind of based with the newer, you know, and it's not that swing in some of these players. It's awesome what they do and the technique, and but it's, you know, where that doesn't have that little swing to it, you know?
Some of it's become more of an athletic event than it has become music.
Yeah.
You know, which, look, everything has its place. I can certainly appreciate, well, in any of those speed metal bands, I always appreciate the drummer. It's tremendous,
I mean, it's
you know?
The speed where they play with their hands and feet is insane.
But I'm not a classically trained guitarist or anything, so I wouldn't even know how good their guitarists are, but I would imagine the drummer's the standout in those bands.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's true. I mean, again, and, you know, you may not like it, you may not, you know, I mean, I always say after a while, like, students will play me some of that stuff, and my heart starts pounding. I'm like, look, I'm too old for that.
Hey, I can listen to Hate Eternal, but I can only listen to two songs at a time, because then I'm at my destination, and I got there way early.
Isn't that funny? Yeah, I know. I'm like, grabbing, I'm like, I'm downstairs, but they're playing this stuff for me. I'm like, shaking. But, everybody, I guess, we get some kind of, you know, influence from. And then when the drum machines came on the scene, you know, when you had, at least when drummers were programming, you're like, man, that's pretty cool
right.
groove. You know, and then you realize a drummer came up with it, you know. And stuff was where you, and then it was other drum machine thing where you go, it's physically impossible.
That's right.
You know, how am I recreating this? So now, you know, now you'd be doing a cover tune that has this thing going on. It'd be like, we do it like the record. Oh, really? Well,
right. Yeah.
I better get a machine because I can't play that. So you would try, which was a cool thing, I guess, there we go, that I remember trying to create parts, but making your own, you know, and making it organic maybe, even though it was done with a drum machine.
Right.
I remember playing with bands and going, look, I'm going to do my own thing to it.
Right.
So a lot of that, the drum machine stuff did influence that.
Yeah.
You know, to come up
with
your
absolutely.
Own thing.
Some of the beats that have become sort of the mainstay of some of this dubstep and these other things,
right.
We have to replicate that. So now we've had to figure that out.
Yeah.
So another evolution.
Very true.
It's the funny thing about drums. People will argue, no, guitar is the oldest instrument. All right, I'm sure that there was a hollow log in some other guy's head way earlier than there was. Some guy says, hey, you know what? If we take these cat guts and we dry them out and string them really tight, something's going to happen, you know? So we're the oldest instrument in the world, but the drum set itself is one of the younger ones. Maybe 100, 110
yeah,
years old, maybe?
Yeah, think about we always you know? The hi-hat. When I tell students, I go, the hi-hat didn't even exist.
Right, which is why it's on the one side and why we play crossed over, because that foot's sort of busy. If we had had the time... You know, and there had been like cable run bike brakes at that time. You might have one of these way before you had one of these, you know? But we had the technology we had at the time, and man, I tell you.
It's a cable, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty neat, you know?
Who makes that?
Pearl made this one.
Cool.
It's funny, when I look at this thing, every time I see that thing, I think of that clinic that I saw with you three guys, those many years ago, because I felt sort of bad for Joe Franco. I teach in one of his books all the time. I teach in his double bass drumming book, and he spent, I don't know, it felt like 20 minutes to do that first solo, and then he gets out, and, you know, he grabs the mic, and, you know, he did get clapping and everything, but one of the first things that they ask is, what's that thing on your hi-hat? Because Drum Workshop had just made the drop clutch.
Oh, that's
good. I'm sure Dennis at the Drum Center must have sold like 20 of those things the next day.
That's what happened, right?
But that was the very first question.
Well, so many questions at the
clinics. And Morgenstein, he had questions about Rush more than anything else, so he had to regale us with Neil Peart stories about, you know, the French tutor and the you know, biking from
that's
city
right.
to city and that sort of thing, and, you know.
I remember going to Bozio with the other, Sonny Emery, who's insane, too. And the first question with Bozio, after he does, you know, his shows his genius and what he was, you know, what he created, how is it being married to Dale Bozio? You know, something like that.
Right, yeah. I remember that was actually, he said something about that, Terry Bozio, in 83 or 84 in Modern Drummer magazine. He just could not shake that thing. And, well, we all know how that turned
there
out.
There you go. Well,
so, things happen.
Yeah.
But let me see what time it is here.
Oh, yeah.
It's just about 5
perfect
o'clock.
Time.
Terrific. Well, this was a great conversation. I'd like to invite you again in a future date.
I'd do it again.
I'm sure you're a wealth of knowledge.
Anytime.
Terrific. All right. Well, this is the first one. I want to thank you all for tuning in, and this has been Frank Bellucci, and
two
this
L's,
is
two C's.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind. All right, tune in till next time. Thanks.
Thank you. Two L's, two C's.